You're listening to the Sprues and Brews podcast, your weekly podcast looking at all things Warhammer.
It is episode 74 of the Sprues and Brews podcast. My name is Dave and I'm joined once again by Matt.
Hello.
And Jay.
Hello.
Matt, you've come very formally dressed to this podcast. What is the reason behind this?
So I was stuck in work and I didn't think I'd actually make this recording. So I suppose technically I'm a special guest this week.
Yeah, we are blessed this week with Matt's appearance because you really should be home lying down after a long, hard day at work.
This is true, but you know, dedication to the course.
Dedication to the podcast, that's what it is. So on this week's show, we're going to be talking about The Greater Good, which is the latest Psychic Awakening book for Warhammer 40,000.
All about those filthy Tau, isn't it?
Not all about the filthy Tau, although a lot to do with the filthy Tau. We also have Astra Militarum in here.
Nice.
Militarum Tempestus. Tempestus. The Scions get a bit of a buff in here. And the old Gene Stealer Cults.
The Gene Stealer Cults,
They pop up in the book.
As they want to do.
I was trying to think of what's it called? Ambush. The appearing ambush. Anyway, I'm waffling. We've also got our top three this week. It's focused on, well, how did you word it, Matt?
Ways to a Warhammer fan's heart.
There you go. Ways to a Warhammer fan's heart. We've also got a little bit of news this week as well, including a surprise pre-order that came out of absolutely nowhere. So we'll talk about that in a moment. But first of all, we'll talk through our hobby updates. So Matt, what have you been doing in the hobby this week?
So this week I've been painting 32 Sisters of Battle. Six squads of five sisters, plus a heavy bolter and a storm bolter as alternate weapons. They're done, based, painted. All good. There's some pictures up on the various social media outlets. And on schedule to get the army done by the 15th of March, I want to say.
Just when we thought Matt was slowing down with his painting, because he's had a little bit of a quiet a few weeks.
Yeah.
He just turns up, paid 32 models, guys.
Yeah. Tonight I was planning on spraying up the next batch, which is going to be some Retributors and Dominions and Celestians, all the kind of more non-troop choice sisters. But I'm knackered, so that might wait till tomorrow now.
I don't blame you. Don't blame you at all. They look fantastic. Make sure you check out our Instagram.
They're on Instagram? They're on Instagram, they're on Twitter, they're on Facebook.
So, yeah, make sure you check those out. Jay, what have you been up to in the hobby this week?
I'm trying to remember. I've had a busy week, actually, this week, so I've been away. I have done some more painting on my Blood Bowl team. I also had my first Blood Bowl League game. Oh, what a game it was.
It sounded absolutely epic.
It was everything you wanted from a game of Blood Bowl. There were lots of deaths. There were lots of quirky goings-on, like, what was it? Five elves turned up to play during the second half.
Heat exhaustion, yeah. I think the best bit was the final turn equaliser from the elves.
Turn eight equaliser, yeah. How many dodge rolls did I need to make to get that?
There was a lot. And throughout the game, Jay had rolled so many ones for dodges. And then this last turn where it was looking very unlikely Jay was going to get out of, like, the just past halfway point, dodging past a load of guys, two go for it, and yeah, managed to pull it off.
So you were playing as the Pro Elves, that's your team in this league.
The Elven Union,
yeah. What were you playing against?
I was playing against a Norse team, and it was a really, really cool looking Norse team. It was a chap from the Purple Sparkle Unicorns, and he's converted up a load of the Warcry Corvus Cabal models into his Norse team with a sprinkling of Chaos Warriors.
They were excellent conversions.
Oh yeah, fantastic, really. I can't wait. I mean, he was still finishing them off, they weren't painted yet, but it's going to look like such a cool team when that's done. And they were a really cool team to play against because
they all had block, didn't they?
They all had block, yeah, they were really just solid.
Nice.
So that has been my hobby in this week, in the time I've had. I am planning to get a load more paint on the Blood Bowl team this weekend because I want to try and get it finished before the club night that we've got on the 3rd of March, is it?
3rd of March, yeah.
So I want the team painted by then. I've got some elf cheerleaders on the way from Forge World. I'll get the elf cheerleaders painted up. And then in between all of that, and working, I've been on the old Battle Scribe trying to put together a 1,250-point army list from loads of different, from Ultramarines, Tau, Eldar, Harlequin, Custodians,
Scions,
trying to figure out what army I want to take to the 40k event next month.
Nice. Still not settled.
I don't know. I don't know what to take. I don't know.
I think you're going to take Makari and a load of Gretchen.
Wow, well, he appears in the news this week. For me, this week has been... I've built my Blood Bowl team, but I've not yet had a game with them, and I've not put any paint on them at all. I really... If the weather's a little bit better this weekend, I'd like to spray them, but I think it's forecast to rain. At least there's no storms this weekend.
If it's going
to
rain, I know a man who can get them sprayed
for
you.
That's very true. I've got those built since the last podcast. The main things I've done is I finished my Ironclad for my carriage on Overlord.
Nice.
Because I don't think I'd finished that last week.
No, I think you've done the other one.
Because I got it literally done just in time for our game on Sunday.
Yes.
Where my carriage on Overlords went up against the forces of Zeech.
That was a good game, wasn't it, Dave?
What objective was it? I can't remember what game it was.
It was the one where there are five objectives. I can't remember the name of it. The one in the centre's worth two. The
focal
one's opposite
point.
Worth three. Yeah, and then one
focal point.
One of them.
I did unfortunately lose... but it was an amazing battle. I tell you what, I killed a lot of Zeech.
You did?
With a lot of firepower. Those Carajons can pump out so many shots. And I'm definitely loving the Barak Urbaz with the extra Aether Gold. I think Aether Gold is such a cool mechanic.
Yeah, I think the Aether Gold really helps you during the game.
Yeah, rerolling saves, rerolling hits. Very, very cool. My Ironclad's finished. And I've now commenced work on my Endrin Riggers. So... I've got one completely painted, and I've started doing two more. I'm going to get those two completely finished, then I'll do the other three.
Awesome.
And then there's not actually that much left to do. A unit of Arcanauts and a couple of characters.
Cool.
Oh, and a gun hauler.
So we'll be using these for our campaign that we're going to do. We're going to start a different army for that.
No, I'm not using these for our campaign. I'm going to be starting a new army. For the campaign in Haish.
Ogres, yeah. You talked about this a few weeks ago.
Yeah, it was ogres, wasn't it? It's not ogres anymore. I'm actually going to go Slaanesh.
Filthy power gamer day for this Slaanesh.
Well, they've been nerfed, haven't they, recently? Maybe that's why the appeal.
Nerfed, in inverted quotes.
So I've been spending the last few days absolutely rinsing YouTube of Slaanesh videos. To see how they play and stuff, and they're really cool.
It is, you can go for multiple Keepers of Secrets then, yeah?
Yes, I think so. I saw a good battle report the other day where somebody had a normal Keeper of Secrets and the named one,
Shalaxy,
and it did really well.
Shalaxy's cool.
And when his normal Keeper of Secrets died, it just summoned another one.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's pretty cool. So, yeah, I think that's what I want to do. And I never used to be a big fan of Slaanesh models, but they've really grown on me.
I've got a load.
Chaos does that to you, apparently.
Corruption. Does, yeah. I've got a load undercoated if you want to give me a try.
Yeah, definitely. And I think for our narrative as well, with obviously Jay playing Lumineth and you being Ossiot Bone Reapers, I think there's lots of potential for narrative there.
Yeah.
If I get hold of an Archeon, for example, he's got beef with the Bone Reapers. Obviously, trying to find Slaanesh. Jay's trying to hide Slaanesh, so it'll fit quite nicely. I think it'll be really cool.
Yeah, I think so.
So yeah, that's that. And I think that's me for the hobby. We've not played anything else. Just looking forward to finishing my Overlords now. And what I really need to do is undercoat some Tau as well, because I want to get them done. Excuse me, for the club night, and I'm looking forward to picking up Shadowson as well.
Awesome.
So that rounds up our hobby updates. We've still got lots to go on this podcast. We're going to come back to you with the news. This week's news is slightly quieter, I would say, than the previous few news segments.
I've noticed a trend. Whenever I'm not writing the news, it seems to be really quiet.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? And I did scour the internet and sprueseandbrews.com, the greatest place for Warhammer news, FYI. and it is a little bit quieter, but it's not to say we haven't got stuff. What surprised me on Sunday was what's up for pre-order this week.
It's a weird pre-order, isn't it?
It is. We were expecting maybe Seraphon.
I was expecting Seraphon.
Potentially saying. Sisters, which we'll talk about in a moment in the news. But no, we've got made-to-order Valhallans.
Yeah. These are nice models still.
Very nice models.
I'd love to do a Valhalla army, but not with these models. Only because these models are nice, and they have that charm to them, but the recent...
A new kit in that style would be
exactly,
so good,
it would, yeah.
So, up for pre-order on Saturday, we have got boxes of 10 Valhallan guardsmen. We've got special weapons teams. We've got a generic commander. We've got Chenkov, the special character. And they're also doing a platoon, which basically is like a Star Collecting Valhalla, only it'll be considerably more expensive than a Star Collecting box, which includes two 10-man units, some heavy weapon squads, and Chenkov, the special character. These were all in metal, I think, aren't they?
They're all metal, yeah.
So they're up for made-to-order. Normal made-to-order rules apply. You've only got a week to order them, and then I think they plan to ship them within 30 days.
Yeah, and they sometimes come a bit quicker than that
as well. I know I got my Demon Host pretty quick. I forgot I'd ordered him, actually. Just turned up 1 week. That's not all, though, as Matt would say. Classic Yarrick is coming back as well, and this is a really classic model.
I think this is the original one where he's got like a crab claw, power claw.
Yeah, and that paint scheme as well. It's just classic.
Yeah,
absolutely classic. He's also up for made to order on Saturday.
Now it's interesting that he's up for pre-order because I do wonder: are we going to see a new plastic model for him in the imminent future?
Well, there is another character coming back who has history with Yarrick, so I think it's not beyond the realms of possibility. Speaking of this other character, we've heard a lot on Warhammer Community this week about the next Psychic Awakening book, Saga of the Beast. So we have had another teaser image where you can just about see quite a large orc in the background.
Is it an orc or is it a knight? I thought it was a knight.
It could be a knight, yeah. It looks massive anyway. But the articles this week have not been about Gazgul. They've been about Makari.
Yes.
His little goblin banner bearer.
His legendary banner bearer.
So they've teased some of his rules this week. Now, I don't think there's many units in Warhammer 40k that have a 2-up invulnerable set.
It's amazing.
A 2. It's called Suspiciously Lucky.
Well, rumours were he was sat on and fed to a squig, but you know, rumours of his demise were greatly over exaggerated.
His 2+ invulnerable save saved him, obviously. But that's not the best thing about this guy. The best thing about this guy is the stabber that he's armed with. So he gets 2 attacks. These attacks are strength user, which is a mighty 3.
That's pretty strong.
That's good for a grot.
0 AP, damage 1. But when resolving an attack made with this weapon, a wound roll of 6+, so not unmodified either, inflicts D3 mortal wounds on the target and the attacks who can enter.
So good.
It's mental.
And there's ways to give him more attacks, and is it an unmodified 6?
That's what I'm just... Yeah, unmodified. So you can buff his... his wound rolls. He's also got the banner, which he's famous for, and that allows only Goth, so of course Gazgul's Goth, isn't he?
Yeah.
Gretchen can use his leadership instead of their own.
Which is a mighty 6 instead of 4 or 5. Yeah. I mean, that's impressive there. That's Gretchen leader material.
So very cool.
The thing is, if this is Gazgul's banner bearer, what's he going to be like? I mean, he's always been a Lord of War, but his profile's never really reflected.
What, Makari's been a Lord of War?
Yeah, Gazgul's never really reflected his true Lord of War status, so I can't wait to see what we get there.
Well, you've got an orc army ready to be led.
I have his evil sons. His evil sons, but I'm sure they'll let Gazgul in.
Yeah, I'm sure they would. Very excited to see this. Very excited to see this model. Matt, you're going to... I'm glad you're here, actually, because there's been a change to the Middle-earth errata today.
There has. There's been a change to a couple of erratas this week.
Mm.
So, Middle-earth, we mentioned week before last, I think it was, that they changed how allies worked, where, you know, you needed to have a hero of valour to lead that detachment, which led to some... grumblings, let's say, on Facebook.
And some good internet memes.
And some brilliant internet memes, where a lot of the the armies that people were taking didn't have that hero level, so they couldn't be used. Now, a lot of it was cheese, and that's why it was changed, but you can kind of see the logic that, okay, it is quite nice to bring some of these thematic allies. So they've readdressed it. So if, narratively, the armies would fight together, they only need a hero of fortitude or higher to lead them. Where if you're convenient or impossible, you need a hero of valour. So that represents the fact that if you've got two tightly knit armies, a minor hero would come to lead them because they'd be working together anyway. Mm-hmm. Where two kind of out there armies, where from a rules mechanic they might not gel as well as narratively, it'd be a major character leading that detachment to the army. I think that's a good change.
Makes sense, yeah.
I mean, I quite liked the original one anyway, where each detachment had to have a big named hero, but at least you've got the options now of lesser heroes. With that in mind, some of the heroes have also had their leader level changed as well, just so you can't cheese it out, basically. So there were some good picks, like Arwen, who has a low points cost and some awesome magical powers. It seems a bit cheesy to allow her to lead a detachment of, you know, Rivendell elves or something. So they've knocked her down a tier, so she can't do that.
Okay.
And I think all the changes that they do is to, you know, for the good of the game.
Yeah.
Even if people's super cheesy army is no longer valid.
Yeah. No, that's fair enough. I think that's a fair enough change. And yes, there was, I think Zeech and Caradron's both got erratas this week as well. Was that on last week?
I think we might have mentioned it last week, but yeah, Zeech now, the unmodified one situation, does bring back horrors. It'll count as the one will count as an unmodified one, but any other result is still modified by the number of models lost, as per usual.
And I know the Caradrons, all they had was clarification on drops as part of a battalion, which I think was self-explanatory, but a few people still wanted that completely clarifying.
Yeah.
So that's fair enough.
It's good that they've clarified it the following week.
Yeah. Obviously, I mean, that is one thing they're really good at nowadays, is listening to consumer feedback. And taking it on board and for these FAQs and stuff, which is why it's important. If something's really making you grumble about rules, write into them.
Yeah, let them know.
Yeah, because they will do something with
it. I'd say with a caveat that it's constructive feedback.
Oh yeah, just constructive.
Going, this is terrible. It's ruining my army. Yeah. It's maybe not the best angle to go.
Yeah. Cool. Another piece of news we had this week was that we've got a brand new mobile game coming out based on Warhammer Quest Silver Tower.
Yeah, looking forward to this.
So, we have a handy little interview with one of the developers of Silver Tower on spruceandbrews.com. So, we'll put the link in the podcast notes, but it's well worth checking out.
What a scoop.
What a scoop, yeah. So, these guys have got pedigree.
Yeah, I mean, he was working with, you know, a number of big name developers, and they did the previous two Warhammer Quest games, which are brilliant games. I love the original Warhammer Quest.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, seeing more of that. And it looks like there's a load of content coming for the game as well. So.
And what's always good as well is they're Warhammer fans.
Yeah, they are. And, you know, we got their favourite Sprue and Brew. It's all cool.
And I really liked his Stormcast Eternals that he painted for Underworlds. Very, very cool. So check out the website for that interview. And this coming Saturday, we have got more reveals because it's the New York Toy Fair. So I don't know what time it's going to break on Warhammer Community.
It is 3 p.m. UK time.
3 p.m. UK time. Now, typically, these toy fairs are your box games. I think at the last toy fair, we had announcements for Space Marine Heroes, which was a self-contained box game, originally just released in America, just recently come out over here. And other similar... Space Marine Heroes is the blind bags, isn't it? And Blood Bowl Blitz, which was like a mini entry point to Blood Bowl.
I think we've previously seen some like Underworlds expansion as well, because the idea is this is a show for game shops, isn't it? We're going to sell your more kind of self-contained stuff. I don't think we're going to see like a Lumineth reveal, for example.
No.
We might see the next Underworlds gang or a self-contained box with some exclusive figures that may or may not pop up in other places.
Yeah. Yeah, so keep an eye on the website on Saturday, as we'll have the news up as soon as we can when they're revealed. This month's White Dwarf is in subscribers' hands. I think you've both got your copies.
We have indeed.
And what's exciting about this month's White Dwarf for fans of Orcs, such as myself, is there's some brand new battalions in there.
Mm.
Now, the community is well and truly kind of split on this, on how good they are. From a narrative point of view, I think they're really good. From a gameplay point of view, maybe not so, but I really like the fact they're continuing this trend of putting battalions and match play stuff in
Rules
White Dwarf.
In White Dwarf, yeah.
In Rules, yeah.
There's a really good painting guide in there for the Orcs as well, I thought.
Oh, is there?
Yeah, really good.
So, in fact, the content in White Dwarf has been really, really good of late.
Yeah, it has.
Of gaming content. And there's an entire Black Library novel that is split over the next few episodes of White Dwarf.
Nine issues, yeah. It's Faith and Furies, I think, yeah. Sisters of Battle novel.
Yeah.
What's really cool about this White Dwarf, though, really, really cool, is there's Seraphon on the front cover.
There is, yeah. I really like that artwork.
Yeah.
That's on the limited edition one. On the, not limited edition, the subscriber only one. The general one on the shelves is the Auruk War Clans cover.
Ah, right, okay.
But you've got the nice shiny one with the Seraphon on it,
yeah.
Which is very pretty. This week we spotted a comment on Facebook which confirmed that we've got more Sister Battle coming in March.
Yeah.
Now, we have been thinking, you know, where's the rest? It's basically one wave left, isn't there? What we think, one wave.
Well, it could be a couple of waves. I think some of the stock levels and supply may have been affected a little bit with the coronavirus outbreak, because some of the paper stocks and some of the scenery kits do come from China, so that may have affected that a little bit.
I mean, if you were Mortarian, leader of the Death Guard, and you knew the Sisters of Battle's reinforcements were en route in system, you would set up these little things, wouldn't you?
Cause of the coronavirus confirmed.
Is it Dark Imperium too?
Just
the Plague Wars.
Yeah, Plague Wars.
So March, hopefully we see the rest. It's probably two releases worth, to be fair, because there's quite a lot of kits we haven't seen.
Scenery,
we've got the tank, we've got a lot of the cult stuff, we've got the jump pack girls. Yeah, there's a lot of characters, so there's quite a bit of stuff left to release.
One last bit of news, which was revealed today, is that Games Workshop have signed up with Lace Records to host sort of streams and downloads of popular Warhammer soundtracks, such as games and things like that, which is quite cool.
I love the Dawn of Free. Do you know the Dawn of Free cinematic, intro-cinematic music? I love that. It's dead atmospheric.
Yeah, I was listening to the Vermintide soundtrack on the way here.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think stuff like this is really good when you're painting as well, if you want someone in the background. And it's really cool when you get, like, going Warhammer World and you can hear kind of the music going on in the background. So head on to Warhammer Community for further details about Warhammer for your ears, as the headline so quite rightly points out. Before we wrap up the news this week, I just wanted to point our listeners in the direction of spruesandbrews.com, not only for your interview with the Silver Tower developer, Matt, but also because, Jay, you've done a very extensive painting guide for the Seraphon using contrast.
Yeah.
So
I have to paint the Seraphon in a week.
Yeah, which is a really cool article.
And they look absolutely brilliant as well.
Yeah, yeah. They're good, like, tabletop gaming level. They look good, like, on the battlefield. Not so win any Golden Demon Awards, but...
So if the Seraphon battle tome tickles your fancy when that comes up for pre-order and you want to start a Seraphon army, make sure you check out that article. And later on this podcast, we're going to be talking about the greater good. I've gone and done a written write-up about that book as well, which is also on spruesandbrews.com, so make sure you check that out. In fact, actually, we're talking about that next, aren't we?
Yeah.
I was thinking there was another segment, but there isn't. So we're going to take a pause and we're going to come back with Psychic Awakening, The Greater Good. So the Psychic Awakening continues. We're now on book
five or six.
We're getting there. We're getting through the series. This latest one is called The Greater Good, and it pits the Tau against the forces of the Astra Militarium and the Gene Stealer cults.
Yeah.
So I've been very excited about this because Tau are my current 40k project, ready for the Unicorn Tournament, when I want to get 1,000...
You've had dabblings with the other forces in this book, though, as well, haven't you?
I have. Astra Militarium is probably the one I've... Well, no, I've never even really started the Gene Stealer Cult, so I only did a couple of models. But yeah, this is a very exciting book for me. It's also the first Psychic Awakening book I've bought, because I've been tempted by a couple of the other ones, but I've never committed to buying one. But yeah, we've been fully involved in the Tau at the moment. This book was a must-buy. Within its contents, it's quite a few pages of lore telling us what is going on in this conflict. Because obviously it doesn't really tie in with any of the goings on in Psychic Awakening. They're all very segmented.
It's all happening at the same time in different areas of the galaxy, isn't it?
Yeah. Whereabouts in the galaxy is this set then?
The Chalnaff Expanse. You're going to ask me where that is, aren't you?
Yeah. Is it near like the Damocles Gulf and that sort of set?
I think it is. Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, I'm looking at the map here and I can't really
Eastern
tell.
Fringe, isn't it?
But normally? this is the Fifth Sphere expansion.
Oh, right, okay.
They've come into contact with the Death Guard, who aren't an army in this book, but they're mentioned in the lore.
Well, the Death Guard, if I remember rightly, are operating in that area because it's near Macragge, isn't it? In the 500 Worlds.
Yeah.
So,
and it goes into further details about stuff that we learned in the last Tau Codex. So the Star-Tide Nexus, which is becoming a big part of the Tau lore. It's how they really get around the warp and such. So there is some really cool lore in here that brings us sort of all up to date and really inspires you with the three armies that are in this book.
Is there some interesting lore in Farsight? Has that been developed?
Not really.
Oh, right.
He doesn't get much of a mention in the lore, but it's worth pointing out, which we'll come to in a moment, that it paint your Tau red, because some of the buffs that Farsight and Clades have had are fantastic. Do I wish I painted mine red? Maybe, but I'm quite happy with my my colour scheme. There is an additional mission in here, which is quite, I would say, a fairly basic mission. It's very narrative-driven with Astra Militarum against Tau, defenders versus attackers with their own stratagems, something we see quite a lot in these kind of supplement books and core rule books and stuff. But the real meat and bones about this book is the rules for the three armies, because the Tau Codex has been out a little while now.
Yeah, a lot of these Psychic Awakening books have been a way of updating older books, haven't they?
Yeah, they have.
The Tau have been able to compete at the top level though with certain builds so far. I think they've thrown a few spanners in the works at some recent tournaments with a specific build of Tau.
When I was writing the review for this book, and I was looking at in particular the stratagems, you can tell that they've gone, okay, not many people are taking broadsides with rail rifles. What can we do to change that?
Yeah, I got...
Nobody's taking crew. What can we do to change that?
I got the impression that if you... I mean, the big draw of Tau are the battle suits.
Yeah.
But until this book hit, the battle suits were probably not the most effective unit in the army.
Yeah.
However, with the Septenets and the Strategiums... I think battle suits now are...
It thrusts
can compete.
Yeah, it thrusts the crisis suits and the broadsides into the spotlight and really gives you a list-building quandary on what you know what you want from your army.
See, I really like the battle suits. I think it's the iconic part
it's
of
It's a unique Tau, selling point of Tau, yeah. It makes them look distinctive on the battlefield, so
I think Tau players get a bit of a rep at the moment because a lot of people are taking just tons of drones, like shield drones and...
Well, it's the normal list you see at the top, like competitive lists are... Free Riptides, shield drones all over the shop, and as many commanders as you can legally fit into a list.
Yeah.
Whereas now, I think you have options of building Crisis Bodyguards, Crisis Battle Suit teams, even the Stealth Suits and things like that, I think, have got a buff in here with the changes to the Burst Cannons and things like that.
And like you say, the Tenants and stuff. Yeah. The first key bit of sort of rules we get for the Tau is a revised data sheet for Commander Shadow Sun. Her stat line hasn't changed, but some of her abilities on her suit have, and of course she's got a choice of weapons now. So whereas before she just took the two basic fusion blasters, she now gets a choice between a dispersed fusion blaster or a high energy fusion blaster.
Which is interesting because we haven't seen many named characters with a choice of weapon options.
No, they're not a million miles apart.
That's a good point though, yeah.
Yeah, they're both minus 4 AP. The dispersed one does D3 damage, the high energy does D6. The dispersed, you get two shots. The high energy, you get one, and there's 1 point of strength difference. So basically, dispersed is your more shots.
Anti-tank versus anti-elite infantry.
Exactly,
it seems a shame to me that it's a different weapon and not just a different firing mode.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you can either give your Shadow Sun model two dispersed or two high energy.
Not one of each.
You can give a one of each as well.
All right, okay.
So you can choose between the two. I think... personally, I would go for the same one and then give her a roll, maybe.
Yeah.
I think I'm more tempted by the dispersed fusion blaster with the amount of space marine armies and stuff around. And there's a lot of other stuff in the Tau army, which is high strength able to deal with tanks. I don't know if you guys would agree.
Possibly. I think all the tower weapons have been buffed a lot in this book. I think my favourite changes are to the missile pods.
Yeah.
I think missile pods and burst cannons. I mean, if it was me, I would load out all my battle suits and stuff with missile pods and burst cannons. And if you're doing that, then perhaps you would take the anti-tank fusion blasters on Shadow Sun.
Yeah.
Because there's that much space marine killing weaponry. I mean, you can get missile pods, what, strength 7?
Like, yeah.
4-6 shots at strength 7, up to AP minus 3, D3 yeah. damage a shot.
We'll explain all that in the when we talk about the tenants in a moment, where they all kind of come into play. Shadow Sun, you have to take 2 drones of it now. So in the rules as they were before this book, you could pay for drones if you wanted, or you could just take vanilla Shadow Sun. Now she comes with an advanced Guardian drone and a command link drone. You have to take them. They're part of a data sheet. She's 127 points. It comes with those. They haven't really changed. It has caused a little bit of... I think we'll see an errata for this quite soon. From feedback I've seen online, people aren't too happy that her infiltrator rule is different to stealth suits and ghost keels. They have a lot more flexibility on where they can be deployed. Shadow Sun can't. She has to be in your deployment zone. She can't be in the enemy's deployment zone. So that's caused a little bit of concern. And also, Shadow Sun can now be taken as part of any sept. She doesn't have to be part of the Tau sept. But for her genius of Kanyun, she would still have to be part of the Tau sept.
It just gives people an opportunity to use a new model.
Yeah.
I do wonder if the deployment things have got 9th edition in mind.
Maybe.
Yeah, because she can only be deployed 12 inches away from the enemy deployment zone. I'm pretty sure with the stealth suits...
Anywhere 12 inches away from enemy models, I think.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So you could really push them forward where Shadow Sun can't. Maybe they've done that purposely because she is a powerful model with those guns. Not sure. She's very cool. A very cool plastic model to go with her as well.
Yeah.
Which is always cool.
She has a Luminef Realm Lords Dawn Rider horse's tail for a ponytail.
For a ponytail.
You look at the Realm Lords horse's tails compared to Shadow Sun's hair, they're almost identical. I noticed that when I was doing my Luminef rumour engine analysis.
In the Tau Codex, obviously, you've got your set seps. So you've got Tau, you've got Viola, you've got Farsight Enclaves. You can now build your own sept. So you've got a choice of 11 rules. You pick 2 of them. Jay, you've already mentioned one called Hardened Warheads. When resolving the attack made with a high-yield missile pod, a normal missile pod, a seeker missile, or a smart missile system, you increase the AP by 1.
That's cool.
So they're already AP minus 1 on a battle suit or a missile pod. So with that tenet, they go to AP minus 2.
Mm-hmm.
You can then put the advanced targeting sensor, is it, ATS, on the Crisis Battle Suit for the third half point, so become AP minus 3. So they are strength, you're getting it, I think it's, they get 2 shots each, don't they? I think it's assault 2 with a missile pod at 36 inch range. So 2 missile pods and an ATS gets you 4 on each battle suit, 4 strength 7, AP minus 3, D3 damage shots.
And
there's you'll probably come onto the prototype weaponry. There's further ways to increase the destructive capabilities. And you can imagine a squad of 6 crisis suits with 2 missile pods each.
It's very cool.
I think it's seriously good.
If you're more into your burst cannons, they have a sept tenant where it gives them minus 1 AP. So you mentioned stealth suits.
Yeah.
So if you've got a lot of stealth suits, they would really benefit.
I really like the look of the burst cannons.
Burst cannons, cool. And that's another one, that stealth suits are also battle suits. They can take the... what's it called? Hard points. They can take the ATS. So then you've got strength 5, what is it, 4 shots, strength 5, AP minus 2.
That's pretty good.
Mm. And you've got other cool ones such as stabilization systems. So this frees up one of your points on your battle suits. It basically gives you moving and firing heavy weapons without penalty, which at the moment you would have to take target lock, say, on your broadsides.
And riptides
to move. Having this set tenant would mean you're free then to put a shield generator on, or ATS,
or more guns,
or another gun. if you weigh that. So that's really cool. There's other stuff here that increases your range.
What are the standout ones for you then?
I think I've just read them out.
Okay,
I think they're probably my favourite ones.
Would you go for these rather than the Tau sept then?
It's tricky. The Tau sept is the strongest sept, I think, with 5+ Overwatch. Myself, I like the Tenant title.
I like the two we mentioned, the stabilization systems and the hardened warheads. But there's so many. I mean, Soldiers in Arms increase the range of the greater good ability by 9 inches. Two 9 inches. So it gives you more overlapping Overwatch.
There's another one that adds 4 inches to the range of your weapons.
Yeah, assault and grenade weapons. So that works really well with either the hardened warheads or the upgunned for the minus AP on your missile pods or burst cannons. You've got more range on those.
I mean, the problem is with the Tau Sept is it's not just the rules for Tau, the Overwatch abilities. You're also competing Long Strike, the characters, Shadow Zone.
Yeah, yeah.
But some cool stuff, though, too.
Some very cool stuff. Now, the best amendments to the Tau... There are some cool relics in the Codex. A couple are standout ones, whereas others are pretty kind of... You always see the same ones, don't you? The Neuro chip. I quite like the one for Tau where you can move 6 inches with your battle suit after you've fired for hiding away behind cover or something. So they've added 2 pages of prototype weapon systems, which basically are more relics for your Tau army. But what's so special about these is some of them aren't just for characters, they're for units. That's
so cool. The unit replaces their weapon with this prototype weapon.
So the one that Warhammer community pointed out was the Magna Rail Rifle, which replaces your rail guns on your broadside battle suits with a Heavy 2 Strength 9, minus 4 AP, D6 damage rail rifle. So more akin to the original... And broadsides.
Yeah, and the cool thing about this as well is it does a minimum of 3 damage.
Yeah, yeah. Any rolls of 1 or 2 count as 3 instead, and you've still got the 6+ to wound inflicts one mortal wound in addition to damage as well.
That's pretty good.
Which is very, very good. Which is the one I really
like. I like stabilization jets.
Yeah, crosslink stabilization jets. So you can give this to either a commander, a unit crisis suit, or crisis bodyguards. When resolving an attack made with a ranged weapon by this model in the unit, you can reroll hit rolls of 1 and reroll wound rolls of 1.
I think some big units of crisis squads with these special weapons would be really good.
In the list I put together, I had a unit of 6 crisis suits with the missile pods on that.
Well, that is nice. They don't need any reroll auras. They're a nice little independent unit that just does it alone.
Yeah.
Yeah. One last one, which I've got to give a shout out to, is the Amplified Ion Accelerator, which you can give to your Riptide. It replaces his Ion Accelerator with a heavy 6, well, standard shot, heavy 6, strength 8, minus 4 AP, flat 3 damage. Or you can overcharge it for the same amount of shots, but an extra point of strength, and it's 3 plus D3 damage on the weapon. Only negative on this is currently the Ion Accelerator. Doesn't matter how many rolls of a 1 you make when you overcharge it, you still only take 1 mortal wound. With this, you take a mortal wound for each 1 you roll.
That's fair, you're doing 3 plus D3 damage per shot.
That is, very true, very true.
You can always whack the stabilisation jets on it, I suppose.
Yeah, but the good thing with this is that even if when you're standing firing it standard, you're less likely to use the 1 command point where you can use 2 of the Nova Reactor things on your Riptide, so you can do your shield and your gun. You don't need to do the gun. So you can just save that CP and just do it on your shield.
I suppose the good thing with these, if you use the stratagem to give multiple people relics, you could use this to gear out a few squads.
I'm planning on using all 3 command points at the start of the game to dish out relics, I think.
Yeah.
Because there's some really, really cool ones. Gatling burst cannons.
It's a bit like the old Tyranid Biomorphs, really, then, isn't it?
Yeah, it's very similar to that, yeah.
Yeah, it is. So that's the prototype weapon systems. We also have 2 pages of stratagems. Again, a couple of these aren't great, but a couple of them are really good. For 2 command points, you can pick a unit of battle suits. Whatever they're shooting at counts as having 5 Marthalites on them.
Wow.
This is one thing I picked up from this. There is a stratagem in the current codex which allows you to add Marthalites to a unit. This one's got, I think it's 2 other stratagems in there which basically add Marthalites to a unit. So, I mean, if you wanted to go battle suit heavy, you may not have many Marthalites in your army. You've got 3 different stratagems you can use to whack Marthalites.
Well, this one on the crisis suits is good because you might have Marthalited something up closer to your deployment. If you drop your crisis suits at the back, obviously nothing's going to be Marthalite back there. So you can pop this stratagem and get all the rerolls and the plus 1.
I quite like the narratives of that as well. You know, a mantra in orbit suddenly marks up a unit and all these crisis suits launch the weapons at it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's cool to see a couple of units in here that didn't get much love in the codex. So we've got some Kroot,
some Vespid, I think,
stratagems. We've got a Vespid one. Use a stratagem in your shooting phase when a Vespid Stingwings unit from your army is chosen to shoot with. Until the end of that phase, when resolving an attack made with a ranged weapon by a model in that unit, if that unit was set up on the battlefield using the Plunge from the Sky ability, you can re-roll the hit roll.
Okay.
So that's pretty cool, because you don't see many Vespids around here. So yeah, there's some cool ones in it. Yeah, there's some cool ones in here to add to your Tau collection. But yeah, that coordinate engagement for the 5 mark collides is by far my favourite. So that's your kind of general Tau Seps stuff. We now move on to Farsight. All the rules for the Aether in here.
Cool.
Now, I couldn't find my chapter approved 2018, which is when the 8 were given rules. So I can't really say what's changed, if anything. I don't know if they've just reprinted them in here for ease. But the 8 are basically Commander Farsight and his 7 best mates. They're all in... Well, most of them are in different suits. You've got a Riptide in there. You've got a Broadside with missile pods. And then they've all got set loadouts.
Yeah. It's basically a unit of special characters.
It is. It's a Lord of War choice. It's 56 power, and I think it's over 1,000 points in match play. But you are getting 8 battle suits. And you also, a couple of these battle suits have got some of your relics that are seen in the Codex, like the Neuro chip, the Ingram chip, and the NeuroWeb system jammer. I'd really like to build these and paint these.
You know what? It's a Lord of the War choice, and then you could probably still fit in a detachment of Crisis suits and have a, you know, awesome Crisis suit heavy army. It'd look really good, wouldn't it? Especially in the Farsight scheme.
Yeah, very cool. And as you're about to learn, the Farsight Enclave has had quite a few buffs. So they're okay in the current book. They're a very short-range firepower army. Like, you've got to be really up close and personal to get the most out of them, but then you're going to get charged.
Yeah.
In this book, they've got a brand new ability to add to what they can already do. So when resolving an attack made with a ranged weapon by a model in this unit against an enemy unit within 12 inches, you treat that enemy unit as having one more Marklight count on it than it actually has. So if you haven't got a Marklight on them, they suddenly have one Marklight.
What's the one Marklight ability?
Reroll ones.
That's pretty good.
To hit. So you're basically getting reroll hit rolls of one on everything.
So no downside to going overcharging your awesome gun that we mentioned earlier then?
No, very true. Farsight Enclaves also get 5 of their own stratagems. So obviously you can use all the Tau ones, but you've got 5 here specifically for Farsight. The one that there's a couple here that I'd point out, but the one I'm going to point out is Veteran Cadre. So use the stratagem before the battle, select one Crisis Battlesuit unit or bodyguard unit from your army that contains 3 models for 1 command point or for 2 command points. You can pick a unit that has 4 or more models. Models in that unit have a weapon skill characteristic of 4+ and a ballistic skill of 3+. So suddenly you've got 1 3+ ballistic skill crisis suits, and that's before Marklights.
That's cool.
That's really good. They also get their own relics. So you've got 3 relics to choose from, and you've got 3 warlord traits as well, which is very cool. One thing I do have to point out about Farsight, though, is currently, if you're playing Tau, you can only have 1 commander keyword model per detachment. So when I'm, for example, my list for the Unicorns, I had to make sure, I mean, it's dead easy with Tau, but I had to make sure I had at least 2 detachments because I wanted to take Shadow Sun and I wanted to take a Cold Star. So that meant I had to have at least 2 detachments. Farsight, he can have 2 commanders per detachment. So, I mean, the reason they introduced that rule is because commanders are incredibly powerful, especially when you equip them all with fusion blasters and stuff.
Cyclic
and which is why they knocked it down to 1 per detachment, so people weren't overkilling on it. Or Farsight Enclave can take 2 per detachment.
You can have 6 commanders in a Battleforged army.
Yeah.
Well, potentially more with your Lord of War choice with a load of unique characters in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are there any commanders in the Lord of War? You've got Farsight in the Lord of War, haven't you?
You've got 3 commanders in the in the 8. So you've got Farsight, Brightsword, and Bravestorm.
So you get up to 7 commanders in a Battleforge.
I'm really tempted to do a Farsight Enclave army.
I think Matt will be borrowing this book after this podcast so you can have a read. They also get their own tactical objectives, which I forgot. So yeah, that's really cool. Swiftly moving on, I apologise if we went through this quite quickly. There is a big write-up on this on sprewsandbrews.com that you can check out for more details. The Astra Militarum, I've had a similar...
just to go back to the tau, there's one thing you did miss out, which is the most important thing in there. There is a tau name generator.
I was going to mention that at the end. All three armies in this book get their own name generators, which is really cool. The Imperial Guard, or the Astra Militarum as they're known now, like the Tau, they have their set regiments in the Codex. You've got regimental doctrines in this book, which is a choice of 12 rules.
Awesome.
Again, you know the score, you pick two of them, and that's your regiment.
Awesome.
So you've got ones where your infantry models can shoot rapid-fire weapons. Even if they've advanced, they just subtract one from hit rolls, makes them a bit quicker. And there's also one that allows you to move and fire heavy weapons. That's cool for your heavy weapon squads.
Yeah.
Or maybe even your Scions with heavy weapons and stuff. They're still firing at full ballistic skill. So that's very cool. The best thing for me, for Astra Militarum in this book, is the inclusion of tank aces. So you've basically got three different tables depending on what tank you want to make a tank ace. You've got your main battle tanks, which are the Lehman Russes, your supports, which are your Basilisks, your Wyverns, your Hydras, your Manticores, your Death Strikes, or you've got your super heavy, so you can have a super heavy tank ace. And you've got a choice of abilities. There are two ways to have tank aces in your army. If your warlord is an Astra Militarum character on foot, instead of giving him a warlord trait, you can give one of your tanks a tank ace.
Okay, cool.
So you can pick one of these. And you can also spend one CP at the beginning of the game to make a tank ace. So you could potentially have two tank aces in your army.
Is it a limit of one time you can use that stratagem?
You can only use a stratagem once per battle, okay. Yes. Yeah, and there's no, like, sometimes you see on these for free CP. No, just one CP, you can pick one. So you can still get two in your army if you wanted. A couple that I'll point out. Weapon Expert, improve the armor penetration characteristic of a turret weapon. This model is equipped with by one. A lot of people are using this on Punishers.
Yeah, that's very good.
Oh, it's like the big Gatling cannon.
Yeah, so they're getting minus one AP. If you want to give your Shadow Sword a tank ace ability, you can give it Steadfast Leviathan. If your army is battle forward, this model gains the regiment doctrine of its regiment, even if it's in a super heavy auxiliary detachment.
Okay.
In fact, I missed that. There's another one. Hull down deployment. This model receives the benefit of cover until the first time it moves in the battle.
That's pretty good.
That's really good. That's plus one to your save on your super heavy.
Well, it's obviously your super heavy just getting blown up turn one.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, this is so fitting for the guard, isn't it?
I'd love to see these modelled up to represent these different abilities as well. Like your super heavy one that you mentioned there, maybe covered in like camo netting.
Yeah.
I remember an old White Dwarf article where there was different tank cases that people had built and converted. It was good.
You could give your Death Strike full payload. Oh no, actually that wouldn't work on the Death Strike. Do not roll to determine the damage characteristic of weapons this model is equipped with. They have their maximum values. Example, a weapon with damage characteristic of D3 inflicts 3 damage. I think that's more for your Hydras and stuff, actually.
Okay.
Death Strikes just deal out mortal wounds, don't they?
Awesome, they sound pretty good.
Yeah, very, very cool. You've got two more pages of stratagems. Astra Militarum players have lots of CP, so there's lots here to get involved in. Again, it's kind of picking on units I haven't seen much on the battlefield. Armored Sentinels, Tauroxes, Veterans, Hellhounds, Master of Ordnance. They've all got some love in this to try and mix up your army building, your list buildings.
Awesome.
You were very tempted by Scions, Jay.
I love the Scion models and the idea of Scions, stormtroopers of old.
Well, like Farsight, they've had a little bit of a buff in this in this book.
They're almost a faction unto themselves now, aren't they?
They are indeed. So if you were to go completely Scions, Militaria Tempestus Scions, you can choose from 7 regimental doctrines. One of them is in the Codex Stormtroopers, but then you've got 5 other ones which give you an army-wide ability. So you've got, for example, the Lamdan Lions, which improve the armor penetration characteristic of weapons models with this doctrine. That's worded weird. Wizard Doctor and Quick Weird by one. So basically an extra AP one on all your assigned weapons.
And all their hotshot las guns and volley guns and stuff are already quite good on the AP.
You've got the Ireton Dragons. They add 6 inches to the range characteristic of rapid fire weapons. So suddenly you've got a bit more range.
And I think as well, this combos quite well with some of the stratagems and other abilities in there, which let them drop in a lot closer to the enemy.
Yeah, and then
unload.
Well, actually, there is actually the Capic Eagles. Infantry models of this doctrine do not suffer the penalty for moving, firing heavy weapons. And when resolving an attack made by a model with this doctrine in a turn in which they disembark from a transport, add one to the hit roll.
Yeah.
So heavy weapons popping out of a Valkyrie, plus one to hit.
Yeah.
That's ace.
I think there's also a stratagem in there which lets you come down within 5 inches of an opponent.
Nice.
They have
so your melter guns are at half range straight away.
Plus one to hit.
Yeah.
They have some relics. Now, the only disappointing thing about this is that they've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. You've got 6 relics, but they're one for each of the new regiments. So depending on who you go with. So who did we just talk about then? The Capic Eagles. So they get distraction charges. When resolving an Overwatch attack made by a friendly Capic Eagles model within 3 inches of this model with the relic, if that attack scores a hit, the target is slowed until the end of the phase. When a charge roll is made for a slowed unit, halve the result.
That's really good.
Yeah, very cool.
And that's on a successful hit, is it?
On a successful hit.
On a 6, I guess.
So if you Overwatch, you're basically not getting charged.
Yeah.
Each of those regiments get their own Warlord trait. So again, if we pick on the Capic Eagles, when using this Warlord's Elusive Command ability, it can issue orders to friendly Capic Eagles infantry units within 24 inches. In addition, while this Warlord is embarked within a transport, it can still use its Voice of Command ability.
That's very good.
It's learned from the Caradron Overlords.
It has. You make the measurements from the transport model's hull. So
I think I'd want to model a big, like, speaker or something.
Yeah. That'd be really cool.
Or a banner flying behind him with the orders on.
Shoot them more.
So as Jay's been quite rightly pointing out, they've got some very cool stratagems. For 1 CP, use a stratagem before battle. Select one Valkyrie model from your army. When you declare that model will hover, it does not lose its hard to hit.
Ooh, nice. -1 to hit all the time.
I really think this army would be a really unique playing army.
They'd look fantastic as well.
Tactical,
I want to start one of these now as well.
Tactical misdirection. This is your stratagem for your Capic Eagles. Use a strategy in your shooting phase when a unit is destroyed by an attack made by a model in your army. In your opponent's next shooting phase, when resolving an attack made by an enemy model against a unit other than your Capic Eagles unit, subtract 1 from the hit roll if that Capic Eagles unit is the closest viable unit from your army to that model. Okay.
So basically, it punishes them for shooting other units than the one that's got that.
Yeah. I'm trying to find the one that you just mentioned, Jay, about dropping in 5 inches away.
It's either a stratagem or a relic or something.
Yeah, maybe it's a relic or something. But yeah, anyway. So that's really cool. So that's the Astra Militarium. They've had some interesting buffs in that army. I mean, they're a strong army still, anyway, aren't they?
Oh yeah,
especially with tanks and stuff. Finally, we move on to the Gene Stealer Cults. These are obviously one of the newest 40k armies, so they didn't need an incredible amount of work because they're still...
The book's, a year old?
Yeah. What they've decided to do with this book is because they had to have quite a few erratas post-codex, they put them all in here.
Well, handy.
So all your sort of clearing up Cult Ambush and Brood Brothers and working out detachments for your Astra Militarium as part of Gene Stealer Cults. It's all explained in these two pages, which is very cool. Like we've had the Tau, like we've had the Astra Militarium, you can build your own cult. So if you're not a fan of the ones from the Codex, you can pick from a list of 12 abilities, you pick 2 of them, and that's your army. So you've got stuff like add 1 to the strength characteristic grenade weapons for that cult. You've got agile outriders, biker models of this cult creed do not suffer the penalty for moving and firing heavy weapons and do not suffer the penalty for advancing and firing assault weapons.
So a lot of the similar ones we've seen on other cults.
Yeah, so if you wanted an all bike army, then you could do that with that doctrine. 2 more pages of stratagems. Again, these are kind of picking out the ones that we don't so much see. So there's a couple for Ridge Runners, Maguses, Sanctus, the Clamavus, and the hybrid metamorphs as well, which I don't think we see an awful lot of. Use this stratagem in the fight phase. When a hybrid metamorphs unit from your army is chosen to fight with, until the end of that phase, add one to the attack characteristics.
Cool.
Which is very cool. There's not, I don't think any of these are particularly strong, but it's always nice to have the extra options. This one's quite cool, actually. The Cult Psyche. Use this stratagem before battle. Select one Cult Magus unit from your army. That unit can attempt to manifest one additional psychic power in your psychic phase. When a psychic test is taken for that unit, add one to the total for each other friendly psychic unit within 3 inches.
That's pretty good.
Because they can only cast one spell, can't they? So
to an extra spell with a buff.
Yeah. Yeah, if you've got more than one. That's they're very, very cool. Finally, for the Gene Stealer cults, if you do go for one of the ones from the Codex, one of the cults, you can get an extra psychic power. So okay. there's a special psychic power for each of those cults. For example, Cult of the Four-Armed Emperor, you can take this psychic power called Undermine. It has a warp charge value of 8. If manifested, select one enemy infantry unit within 18 inches of the psyker until the start of your next psychic phase. Halve the movement characteristic of the models in the unit and halve any advance or charge rolls. So that's really cool. Again, slowing your opponent down. And as Jay quite rightly pointed out, you've also got name generators in there if you wanted to name all your special characters. Yeah.
So this is your first Psychic Awakening book. What do you think of it then as a product, I suppose?
I really like it because I really like the Tau and I've always had a soft spot for Gene Stealer Cults and Astra Militarium. And the thing with these books is if you have no interest in any of those armies, there is absolutely zero reason to buy this book.
So it's a bit different than the Wrath of the Everchosen, where there is some stuff that you could use in your other games. Yeah. It's very much just those factions.
And there's battle plans and stuff as well in Wrath of the Everchosen that I think you might be tempted to use even if you've got no interest in the Ossiarchs or Chaos, whereas that this book doesn't have that.
I suppose on the other hand, we have got these Psychic Awakening books for pretty much every 40k faction, and we will do by the end of the series.
Yeah, these come out quite seriously.
What a month we've had for the last 6 months.
Yeah. It's £25. It's not the biggest book in the world, but if you own or are interested in any three of those armies that are featured, it's a must buy.
My only negative comment is we've got a little bit of a library bloat, let's call it, where there's a lot of stratagems in this book plus a stratagem in your main book, and it can get a bit messy maybe.
Throw in your generic stratagems as well.
Yeah.
Stratagems if you're playing particular missions. There's a lot of bookkeeping. Yeah. So yes, we hope you've enjoyed that read through The Greater Good. Like I say, we do have a written write-up on the spruceandbrews.com if you wanted to read it in more detail. But yeah, I can't wait to hit the Tau onto the battlefield. I'm going to catch my breath and we'll be back with our top three. It is time for this week's top three. So this week's top three, we asked, well, first of all, ourselves and then the community for the three things that a Warhammer fan would love. I've explained that really poorly.
Ways to a Warhammer fan's heart.
That's why we pay Matt the big bucks, because he can word things better than I can. Would you like to start us off, Matt, with your third choice?
So, my third choice, a way to win the heart of a Warhammer fan is to let them have their own hobby room.
Ooh,
now, I'm very, very lucky. I've got a room set up with a table for all the Warhammer antics and all my miniatures. It's a bit of a bomb site at the moment. It needs to sort of out. But a dedicated space to play games or paint on a smaller scale, or just a little part of your house which is home to your hobby.
Hmm. That was going to be one of my choices, actually.
Yeah.
So I want to very quickly think of another one. Jay, what's your third choice?
Phantom Titan.
That it really is the way to an Eldar Warhammer fan's heart.
To my heart, yeah.
Yeah.
A Phantom Titan, Amy, if you can hear me.
Very cool. I'm going to quickly... This is literally just off the top of my head because you nicked one of my top threes. A way to Warhammer fan's heart that you don't know what they want is... it's a boring choice, but a gift voucher.
A gift voucher?
A gift voucher. Because, you know, I know my wife, for example, and she knows I go through various armies and phases.
would you go for a digital Games Workshop voucher, a digital Forge World voucher, or a physical Games Workshop voucher?
Physical, I think. Yeah, physical voucher. Yeah.
Yeah. With the advantage being you can spend that on Forge World goodies.
Yes, you can. It's well worth a trip up to Warhammer World.
It is.
Your second choice, Matt.
You know what's worth a trip to? Warhammer World. A romantic meal in Bugman's. A delightful stroll through the exhibition halls. It's a wonderful place that could spark a beautiful future and maybe a new army or two as well. So yeah, a trip to Warhammer World is my second choice.
Your second choice, Jeff?
A life-size, scaled, fully detailed, powered suit of Terminator armour that I can wear. Just like...
Keeping it realistic, yeah?
Yeah, yeah. If my better half got me out for Christmas or Valentine's Day,
yeah,
it'd be amazing.
That would be amazing.
Yeah.
I was also going to mention Warhammer World.
You can still mention Warhammer World.
Well, maybe you and Matt should go to Warhammer World.
Yeah, we should. Well, he is my hobby wife, apparently, according to all the Games Workshop store. I was going to say Warhammer World. They might not be interested, but it would absolutely steal your partner's heart if you said, you know what, one Saturday, let's go to Warhammer World. Yeah, you know, you want to pick up some new stuff and have a look around. I'd collapse. I'd faint if Leanne ever said to me, let's go to Warhammer World on Saturday. I'd buy her whatever bag she wanted. Any shoes? Excellent.
If it makes you feel any better, I'll come with you, Dave.
Yeah. Your top choice, Matt.
So, you've got your hobby room, you've got your painting station. When things get really serious, though, it spills over. It's inevitable that every surface in your house will have some kind of Warhammer on it. There may be magazines scattered across the tables. There might be Space Marines in the bathroom. Who knows? But yeah, very soon your entire house will turn into a mini Warhammer world.
Yeah. Your top choice, Jay?
My top choice? A weekend hobby pass. So a weekend off the chores. A weekend you can just lock yourself in a man cave, paint all your models, do all your gaming. Weekend hobby pass.
Mine's a combination, really, of both of what you've just said. And that's understanding, patience, and the willingness to listen. Because I know I go on about Warhammer a lot to Leanne. But occasionally, she'll just sit there and she'll listen. She'll listen to what I have to say.
Feign interest.
Yeah. You know, my coffee table at the moment has got a bunch of Caradrons over it. Has she complained once about them being there? No, she hasn't.
Not yet.
I have seen her eyes twitch a little bit, though.
So even if... You know, even though I know she has absolutely zero interest in Warhammer.
She humours you.
She humours me. And if I want to go to a Warhammer club night, you know, she watches EastEnders up as a film or whatever. She's understanding. And I think that's the best thing you could give a Warhammer fan is just the time to play Warhammer and geek out.
Well, that's a beautiful sentiment to end this section on, Dave.
It is a beautiful sentence. So... we've had some community picks, which we're going to move on to next. So, we're on to the last segment of this week's podcast, where we have asked you, the community, for your top three picks. So, I'm going to start over on Instagram. I Paint Models, third choice. Go along with their idea that Sanguinius is very dead.
Sanguinius is very dead.
That's the worst way.
Second, compliment them endlessly.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, that's a really nice paint. That's a really nice paint job you've done on that model, etc. And their top choice, offered to buy them the latest kit.
Oh, definitely, yeah.
That only happens to me on birthdays and Christmases. But it'd be nice if it happened every now and again during the year. My nervous third choice, regular brews during sessions of painting or gaming.
Ah,
brilliant choice.
That's a very good choice.
Very, very good choice. Second, would appreciate a decorative model or diorama made by a gamer just for them.
Ooh, that's
so
pretty cool.
A bespoke model.
Personal piece.
And number one is also a Warhammer fan.
Okay, yeah.
Living the dream in it, that. Zariot Airbrush says, if you really love them, then they've already been crowded by their hobby. Why not get them a cool new paint or brush and maybe suggest a paint day?
Sounds good.
Similar to your weekend idea, Jay, we'd just go, you know what? You can just spend today, your day off, painting. That's really cool. Matt, over to you.
Well, over on Twitter, Chris Womble of Doom says, money for hobby, time for hobby, and space for hobby. Mm. I like that. Mike Loads Minis, Games Workshop vouchers. a trip to Warhammer World / Warhammer Fest for the both of you, and spend time enjoying the hobby with them. Not just play a game, but do some painting and talk about the hobby with interest. Fabius Fulgrim, your wife comes into the room and whispers in your ear, the kids are at my mum's, the phone's off the hook, and you've got 3 hours to go and paint in peace. That is living the dream. And then Dr. Octagon, spice things up in the bedroom by using outfits. Slip on 2 thin coats and drive them wild. And if that gets boring, try wearing 1 thick coat for a bit of contrast. Bam, bam, bam,
bam, bam, bam. Was that actually Duncan Rhodes in disguise?
Maybe.
Writing that tweet. Certainly sounded like it. Next week, we have a very, very fun top three. I think I'm going to really enjoy researching this over the next 7 days. Matt, what is next week's top three?
Next week, we want to know the top 3 jobs in the Imperium of Man.
It's very cool.
And remember, the Emperor's, that job's already taken.
Yes, that job is already taken.
Excellent. So we want to hear some really creative choices during these next 7 days. So please do us proud. Let us know via social media. All the social media links are available at the end of the podcast. Thank you again for your ongoing support. We've had a record month over on the website.
We have. It's been really good. We've loads of views. We've got loads of content. Jay's put up a load of stuff as well, so make sure you check out his posts.
Jay's now the most popular blogger on Sprues and Brews.
I don't think it's Jay. I think it's Luminous Realmworld.
Luminous Realmworld. It's the elf lord in him. Have a great 7 days of hobby, and we'll be back next week.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Sprues and Brews podcast. If you like what you've been listening to, please do give us a share and a comment if you're listening via Apple Podcasts. For further content, please check out spruesandbrews.com, and you can contact us on Twitter @spruesandbrews or over on Facebook, facebook.com/spruesandbrews.